Everyone, and welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Will Alexander.
Yes, you are, young William. We have a good show for you this week. We're going to talk about when to start showing a dog and when to stop showing a dog. Also, some reminders about summer, the heat, and how to take care of your dogs. All this and more on the Dog Show Drive.
I'm born to run down rocky cliffs. Give me grace, bury my sins. Shattered glass and black holes can't hold me back from where I need to go. Oh, 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 oh. Yellow hills.
Well, hello there, young William. How the heck are things up in Milton, Ontario, which you explained last week is the center of the universe?
Just fine today. I'll tell you, I don't recover as well as I used to. I was away yesterday, a three-day dog show, but I drove back and forth, and it was about an hour and a half each way. And when I was showing dogs, there was no way I was driving home back an hour and a half each way, because you come home and you have twice as much work to do because, you know, you have all the dogs to look after. Well, now with just my own two dogs, and what the hell? But I am dragging it this morning, buddy, I'll tell you.
There was a time when we leave the showgrounds an hour and a half to go to a good place for dinner. Not anymore.
I got home one night and I was too tired. I had pepperoni sticks and cheese and some potato salad.
How was the acid reflux the next day?
I don't know. I woke up at 4:30 to leave the damn dog show again.
You know, we talk about this at our stage of life, but it filters down to when handlers have to hit 300 shows a year to set records. The toll it takes on the body, on the vehicles, on the dogs, on the assistants, on everybody. It's then you break it down in one weekend and where you're just showing two dogs and you realize how hard it was for all those years. And you just, I remember I used to take the train in New York to go to work every day, as did my father. I didn't think much of it because that's what we did in our town. And then when you stop and you go to a reasonable situation where you're 10 minutes from your office or don't have one, you realize how stupid it was that you spend 3 hours a day on a train commuting to a job. Yeah. You know, same thing. You just forget when you start off. You don't start off going to 300 shows a year. It sort of just creeps up on you. And then all of a sudden you wonder why you're out of condition, out of shape, health issues, knees, back, elbows, everything hurts. And it's what we do to our bodies. And
Everything just feels heavy this morning. Everything just feels like everything just to move. Everything just feels heavy. And I didn't work that hard. And it was a great show. So it was a London Canine Dog Show and was held at Conservation Park just in St. Thomas. And it was beautiful. And the grass was perfect. There was no bumps. It was just perfect. So it wasn't the rough road that made me tired. I think it's just mileage, man.
Yeah,
it
adds up. Definitely adds up. And it adds up for the dogs, too.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking earlier about when you went at the garden, what do you do? Or in general, how long do you campaign a dog and why?
Well, we started talking about this off before we started recording. And you have a young dog and you go best in show at Westminster. He's just in the prime of his career. What do you do?
Yeah.
What is the answer? Like, in days gone by, you stop showing that dog, you know, because the one Westminster. You know, but that's a hard call. It's a call I wouldn't want to have to make. You know, it's.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. You'd almost rather go reserve best.
Well, most definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
And work your way up. It's tough because, especially today, where it seems that the whole goal is trying to win as many shows as you can and set as many records as you can. Records which, as we've discussed before, people forget as soon as you set them. It's not like it's, you know, as big a deal as it used to be. We'll remember Rock Falls Colonel, the ancient English setter back in the, before I was born. Remember that he had 100 best in shows when there was like 98 dog shows. You won them all. That's a record that you'll on a percentage basis, you'll never challenge. But yeah, I don't know. Well, it's a tough one. It was easy. No, Miss P was clear. And I'm not doing this to bring up our funny 2015 best in show Miss P thing for Doug. I mean this. We still had a year left to show her, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
At least people sure have gone longer than she was only down here for a year.
Only a year. And it's, and I'll tell you, that's what I mean about records. People, because of how she did in 1 year and Best in Show at Westminster, they think she holds some sort of records. Well, mm-hmm. Well, she doesn't. So it's the dog people remember. It's not so much what is in their bag of wins.
Absolutely right. I mean, it was not even a year in Canada before a year down here.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was at the prime of her career. Yes, she could have kept winning after that, but she also could have gotten beat. And who wants to get beat after you win the garden?
I think about the year before when Swagger came onto the scene as an open dog, mm-hmm. wins the group from the open dog class, then goes on to go reserve best of show. What a perfect scenario. Yeah. You couldn't have written any better. That's perfect.
But who would want to trade that reserve for a best in show ribbon at Westminster? Everybody wants to win it. And I completely understand. No one goes there thinking they're going to win it, right?
No.
Well, maybe some people do. So you can't blame someone for entering a young dog. Certainly you should if he's out and winning and doing well. But yeah, that's a question I wouldn't want to have to ask myself. You know, we're very fortunate that it worked out and the way it did for Miss P. They remember her forever.
Yep.
But not because she was shown for 7 years. And but it's an individual. It's the client's call. It's the handler's call. It's the dog's call. How long are they going to tolerate this or want to do this or be happy doing it or be into it? It's such a personal question. But there's a lot to it.
And it's for me, it's almost a historical question, though. Like Westminster, best in show at Westminster. Wouldn't you like that to be your dog's last day in the ring winning best in show at Westminster?
Sure. Yeah. We've seen dogs win groups there that had a hard time winning another breed after. You know, that's a slightly different story, I guess. But best in show happened. It's only happened 148 times in the last 148 years. I think that's the number, by the way. And how many dogs have been shown in those last almost 150 years, you know, I don't know, a million. What are your odds?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Tough call.
Such a hard call. I wouldn't want to have to make it. You know?
Yeah. And especially, you know, when there was just a set number of shows on weekends and the occasional circuit, as we used to call it. Now everything's a cluster. There's a word that goes after that that sometimes is appropriate.
peanut cluster. No.
Yes.
That's before.
But this
brings up a lot of questions, though. Like, if you look at it, do we show our dogs too young in North America? Mm-hmm. I think we do, because by the time they're in their prime, some of them are either old news or don't want to be shown anymore, or they're done. You know, you've wasted that prime of their life where they really could have made a stamp, you know, put a stamp on the breed or their
era. There's a tremendous, tremendous racehorse filly named Lady Secret. She was a secretary at Offspring. And she was setting all kinds of records because they pushed her real hard. Wayne Lucas was her trainer, pushed her real hard. And, she was young and she came out of the gate as the favorite and went to the rail to buy a hot dog and stopped and wouldn't run. She was done. And she never ran. I think they tried her once or twice, but she was just saying, "Hey man, you squeeze the lemon dry, you know?" And there was a great trainer whose name I've forgotten, a long time ago, who they asked him about his horse and how often he was going to run him. And he said, you never want to squeeze the lemon dry. And I remember that phrase and I apply it to dog shows all the time.
It's a good phrase for dog shows.
You know, sometimes a dog wants to do it and you want to do it. I have no problem with that. It's just such a situational personal call. And with a young dog went in the garden, I would love to have that problem. On one hand, because it means you went best and show at the garden, right? But on the other hand, what's next?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's tough call. The whole thing, like even the topic of showing dogs too young, you bring a young dog out and they start to win, you strike while the fire's hot, right? You know, or the iron's hot.
Yeah.
But it's even then, like I think now, I think back on my dog, one of the first dogs I showed, dog named Impresario. And there were back then, there were about, well, maybe 100 shows, 110 shows. And he ended up number one dog all breed in 87. I think if, and I showed him a bit the year afterwards, just play around, mostly out of ego because I missed showing him.
Right.
And he was an older dog at that point. He was already five or six. He was showing gray. And he didn't want to show anymore.
Yeah.
And I remember Mike Billings, who was very, very good to him, very good to him in his career. She leaned over me and I was pushing because she was making the contest of the breed and I was pushing. She leaned over and said, sometimes it's time to cut the string. You know,
is that right?
That's what she said. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was right. He was done. And I think about now, if I had to show him 300 times in the year, he wouldn't have wanted, he wouldn't have done it. He did it because he loved me, but 300 times would have been too much for him. He wouldn't have done it. I know he wouldn't have.
And you know, it's a tough thing because just like in any other sport, if you do catch fire young, well, in our sport especially, what are you going to tell the client? Yeah, I know we're on a roll, but yeah, let's put them away for a year. They don't want to hear that. They want to win.
Right.
So if you're a handler and you're getting those directions, it's tough. You know, it's the rare client that would say, you know what, let's do what's best here. And I don't care about how many. And I mentioned it last week. You know, you look at the results and 500 dogs went best in show on Saturday. And you're almost like, yeah, big deal, you know, but do you want to, and then you get the people who are thrilled to tell you, I just beat the best in show winner from Westminster. And you know, that's an odd push.
Yeah.
I don't get that at all. Different show, different day. You try it. You try going best in show Westminster. So I don't know. I mean, this year's dog was a little younger, but he's also a smasher.
Oh my God.
And, I don't know what I do.
It's a tough call.
Oh, he looks so good that night. Yeah.
But again,
they're good people too.
Pardon me?
They're good people too. And you know, you hope the best for them. But I wouldn't want to make that call. And the same is true when they bring one back out. You know, you won the group, you went reserve best, you showed the dog for 5 damn years, and then you bring them home and you're going to surprise everybody. And 2 years later, bring them back out to the garden. Where you royally get beat by, because it's just enough.
Right. They've reached their expiration date and it's over. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. We have to take our own pride and set it aside when it comes to the dog. And they'll tell you. And there are dogs who want to show 1,000 times a day. There's a rare one that loves it, you know? So it's, again, so personal. So specific to the situation and the owners and the person showing it or the owner handler. And by the way, it's not free.
That's right.
And we have seen people get into financial trouble trying to keep up with the Joneses and going out there every weekend, hiring handlers or doing what they do, just gas and lodging. And it's expensive to show a dog these days. You know, it is. But
I had very good clients when I was showing dogs. I had this one client and they were very good at producing dogs one after another. And they always had really good puppy careers. I remember when best to show up, one was 7 months old. Like they were good clients. And we had this one dog I thought was so special and he was winning. He was winning up a storm. He was winning groups. And up in Canada, we have a system of puppies, two best in the show, best puppy in show. And he was winning. He's up to like 15, 20 best puppy in shows. And they were so excited. And finally, I said, we've got to stop because I can feel him not having as much fun as he used to. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you want to win 15 or 20 puppy shows or do you want to win 15 or 20 best in shows?
Right.
And they agreed with me. We put him away until we all thought he was ready to come back out again. And he took the world by storm. He won a bunch of best in shows.
Great. That's the way you do it.
Yeah.
That's the way you do it. You have to read your dog, not your own ego.
No, it was fun for them. It was fun getting all these ribbons each weekend, but.
Sure. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I can report that our son, Brody, and his wife, Margaret, went to their first dog shows as competitors. Now, this is an unusual situation, right? I mean, he's 20, I should know this, 9 or 28. Yeah. Sorry, bud.
I forget my own age, so it's okay.
Yeah, me too. I ask Cheryl all the time, how old am I again? And in fact, we had this argument last week. We had to get the calculator out. And, oh, geez. I don't know. But anyway, such
that
wonderful
can't be
kids.
Right.
We're so fortunate. They're such good kids, even though I'm their father. But they're in spite of us, you know, they're just super. And we get along so well. It's lovely. But anyway, Brody was a hockey player who just got too many injuries, couldn't do it anymore, and looking for another hobby. He's always been interested in the dogs. When he was 8, I believe he was about 8, he showed a pointer, I think twice. And really the first time was kind of like, I think I mentioned this, George Ward walked him up to the ring, put the armband on, did everything but get in the ring and show the dog for him. And Brody won. And of course, you know, that was great. Not quite going out there on your own being competitive, right? So 20 years later, he gets a beautiful pointer puppy and takes it to its first shows for the 4 to 6 month puppy competition. And he did real well. Two nice breeds and two nice group placements in very large puppy, very competitive and large puppy sporting groups. Unusual how big they were. And that's not the point. The point is he got there. He's had local friends take him under his wing. Our old pointer friends, Nancy and Henry Tuttle. I've known Henry for, God, I don't know, 50 years, probably at least 50, Nancy and Henry. And, they were there. Brody's vet was there. There was friends that he'd met he's been going to shows every weekend at this fairgrounds near his house and meeting people there. Well, that's what you can hope for, right? Now, he has never used his last name. When he's introduced, he tells people, don't introduce my last name, just my first name. He wants to do this on his own. Someone said to me, it would have been better if you were there. And I said, no, it wouldn't. He wants to do this on his own. He's got the talent. He's a great student.
Like Julian Lennon.
Yeah. Just like him. Exactly. But way taller. But much taller. Anyway, he really, and the other thing was these puppy competitions, this 4 to 6 month class thing, if you're a judge, I can tell you that I've done plenty of them. You get all of the breeds. And best in show, because usually the groups are pretty small. Not always, though. And they get judges who, I think you have to have just a couple of breeds or something. And it's a great playground, a learning ground for judges, because they get to go over all these different breeds. And they're usually really good dog people. And he happened to have two really good, serious dog people judge the groups and the breeds. And they were kind to everybody. It's his first time in the ring. He's nervous. He's got a puppy. He's never been to a show before, right? You don't know what's a pointer puppy, no less. Sometimes their screws can be a little loose, as we all know, until they're social. Well, she went in bang up tail back and forth around the ring. But more important, the judges were kind. They were learning too. The video is so cute. One judge is talking to her and, making sure she's relaxed and he's relaxed. This is all we can hope. If we're going to get new people in this sport, it's so essential that they have that kind of experience. The judges are patient and kind with them. And I think that's universal. I think the crabbiest judges in the world get in that 4 to 6 month competition as a judge and realize, hey, this has got to be fun. I haven't seen any exceptions to that. And it just, if you get that, he's hooked, not just because he won, but because all the people were so kind and the judges were so kind. There's many ways we can get new people in the sport. I'm not sure 4-H is the answer, but I am certain that if you get them there, and everyone, doesn't matter if your dog is unshowable, right? Doesn't matter if it lacks quality. If everyone's kind to them and they get surrounded and they see kind behavior. I mean, what if he sat up next to two jerks who are screaming and yelling at each other and bad mouthing the judges all day? How do you think? You think he'll come back?
Yeah, well, you know, that happens a lot.
Yeah. Yep, it happens a whole lot. And he had people, as soon as he put her up on the table, people wanted to help. And he posted his little win yesterday, and he got 40-some comments from dog people all over the world. That's what you hope for, that kind of experience. And boy, I can think of 1,000 situations at shows I've been to where if I was set up near or next to this person, I'd never come back, ever. It's so, we all are in this together.
And well, you think of some situations and people bring in their family.
Yes.
And yes. Kids, and all of a sudden you see these idiots freaking out and bad mouthing everyone here, the show secretary, the club, the judges, the handlers. Who wants to spend the weekend doing that with their family?
So. It's supposed to be a sport,
right?
Fun, family based activity. If you're screaming and complaining about the judges all the time, if you're complaining about the handlers or the owner handlers or the owner handler groups, or if everything's so horrible and you have such a negative mindset on the sport, I've got an idea. Get out. Go find another sport where you can bitch and moan and complain. Yes, we can have opinions that are contrary to the norm. Yes, we can have energetic discussions, but to go back to your van and tee off. That's what I used to do. Smile, wink, go back to the van and beat the steering wheel. It's usually rubberized. but don't go off and, I don't know. You know, we say that we're beating the drum, beating a dead horse probably. And the other one is pick up after yourselves. Oh. You know, there was a post this week by a dear friend of ours, an Afghan extraordinaire, handler, great experience in the breed, doing this all her life. And she said there was dog crap everywhere. Yeah, there's how hard did you not see your dog stop and take a dump? Yeah. Did you really think some fairy poop mother was going to swoop in and pick it up for you?
That is so disrespectful to everybody.
And how, again, you're a new family walking in, and there's a bunch of poops at the entrance, and your kid steps in it and walks. You're never going to come back because it's a bunch of, man. If we want the sport to grow, every little bit has to happen. And we all have a part to play. And one is being respectful and thankful to the people that are running the thing. Because I got to tell you, it's not easy. If you're bitching about the show grounds and bitching about the way it's run, I have an idea. Go get yourself a show chairman job and see how you like it.
Try and do that.
Better yet, volunteer for to do parking.
All you have to do is go to the super's desk, ask to borrow a badge for an hour, wander around, and see how you feel.
That's a good idea.
People start yelling at you because you've got the badge or this and that. Yeah.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. I did want to revisit a situation that we've talked about before with humorous but serious responses. When the judge says down and back,
oh,
is it too hard to go down and back? Is it too difficult to face the judge, get your instructions, turn around and go down and back? Is it that difficult?
And this stopping halfway on the way back and freeze stacking in the middle of the ring. What is that? When did that start? Oh, I can't stand that.
It drives me crazy. I want to see the dog stop its front in front of me and its face, please. And we go ahead. You take 4 steps on the back and turn it sideways and show how it can free stack. That's not in the standard. There's not one damn standard that says must nail the free stack sideways halfway back. I just don't get it.
Well, if that was the case, and you know how many times I would have lost in my career because my dog didn't free stack in the center of the ring?
With some darn good dogs, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then when you leave and go back there and brush your dog and put your makeup on and whatever the hell else you're doing back there for half an hour, when you do go flying by the judge who wants to see the first three steps slowly, and by the way, I know probably why you're doing that is so I can't see the first three steps slowly. But you get him in gear back there, I can't see how he can move. I want to see those first three steps going away. Yes, I know they're going to get better or worse, or they're going to converge or not. But that's essential to assessing soundness. It's essential. And you're taking that opportunity away. I'm going to get ruthless with it. Bonnie told me she had somebody do that, go sideways things. And she refused to go out and look at it. She stood there and she finally said, I want to see his face, please. And the handler had to tuck its tail and turn and face her. And, you know, I mean, yeah. Anyway, we've talked about the loop-de-doop-de-doos forever. I'm sick and tired of it. But you'll see, Will, when you start judging down here more often, you'll.
Oh, I see it up here. I was showing this weekend, and I was watching it and getting angry watching it.
Yeah.
I'm over with these theatrics. Even in junior handling, I'm seeing these theatrics.
Oh yeah,
it's got to stop. It's
and overselling. You're rubbing and, the neck, pulling the neck, hands flying all over, pointing. Here's look neck. And often they're showing you a fault and don't even know it.
If you're gonna do that, at least showing you straight shoulder. Show us something good on it. Don't be trying to. All they're doing is mimicking something they've seen before, and they don't care what they're showing. They'll just do it.
And by the way, it's an insult to a judge. If you think you can convince me because you're rubbing its neck for an hour and a half, it's an insult. And you look stupid. You look stupid. Just do what you're supposed to do. Disappear. That is the whole point. And it's in the junior showmanship rules, as we've discussed. Yet I see him back there working. I work so hard. I mean, you look like you're having a seizure back there. Let it go.
I had a conversation with a young handler. This is a few years back now. He had an okay dog, and the judge brought the two of us out to freestack in the center. And they were just fresh out of juniors, but they were still been around for a while. Well, their dog, four square, but it was a little soft on top, but it stopped four square and tilted its head and looked at him. And my dog kind of jumped around, and I kept working, trying to get it into position. And when the judge gave my dog the win, that handler got really upset because their dog did it perfectly in the center of the ring. I got a little cocky.
I nailed the free stack, damn it.
I should have won. I got a little cocky and said, well, even if mine didn't free stack, mine was better. And you stopped and let them see things that were wrong with your dog.
Well, that's true too, isn't it?
They forget what they're actually doing. You know, they're not there showing themselves off how good they can dance around their dog. They're trying to show their dog because you're trying to do out there.
If you look at old Westminster videos, best in show and group videos, no one's free stacking anything. Yeah. We know where it started. And I was there for one of the earliest applications, but it was a terrier and another dog, and he wanted to see the terrier spar. Be alert, because it wasn't another terrier, to be alert and see how it would be. It wasn't about who can stand still the longest and nail it. And somehow it caught on. Could you imagine imagine seeing your Crufts?
Oh, yeah.
Go out there and do some free stacks. What the hell are you talking about?
Can you imagine those dog right here? What?
Here's my dog right here. I bathed it for you last week. No, just what do you think? You like it or not? I love it. I love it over there.
Well, you think back over some great dogs over the years, and I'm sure I can say this because the dog's long gone. One of my favorite Irish sitters of all time, Marquis. I couldn't imagine him going on the center of the ring and free stacking.
Can you imagine?
No,
that would have been horrible.
Because he didn't like standing on his own to begin with.
Right.
He liked going in the ring, running around the ring, but that part of it was, you ever see Chance outside the ring? He looked like a donkey. Yeah. You know? He'd stand there and say, I'm not going in.
Right. But once George got him in there, it was perfection every time. But yeah, it's just, it's overdone. It's overdone in the wrong breeds. And when I tell you to do the stupid, and I often say this, I say, please stop all this. If you want to do stupid pet tricks, we'll do it at the end.
Right.
And sometimes I'll even say, Oh, by the way, now that we're all done judging the actual dogs, if anyone has the urge to go do Stupid Patrick's in the corner, this is your opportunity to go over there and do that. I did it once, never looked. I sent three or four of them over there, and I turned around and let them do all their stupid shit. And it didn't change a thing about who I was going to put up.
No, no.
Even I wasn't penalizing them. I was just trying to make a point. I've already judged these. In fact, by the way, when you're selling that neck and shoulder crap, I saw it when you walked in.
Yep.
I saw it when you walked in. Don't insult me by trying to. Oh, Jeannie and Annie would, at the right second, not the whole time, when they knew you were looking at two dogs, they might give a subtle little rub down the shoulder blade or wherever it was they wanted to point, loin, whatever it might be, tail set. Subtle.
Let me tell you, they weren't killing you with their stare while they were doing it either.
That's for damn sure. Oh, that bothers me. Oh. I hate getting stared at.
We're both going to go off now.
I know. We've started a fire.
I love watching those handlers go around the ring because you just know if there's ever something in the way, they're falling because they're doing that killer stare all the way around the ring, and they have no idea where they're walking.
I remember there's plenty of handlers that used to do this, but Tommy Glassford, one of my heroes in the world, never mind handler. I remember more than one. We were on the Florida circuit. There was a bunch of us that had real top flight pointer specials. Me, Tommy, Eric Abandes, Jeff Brucker. There's a bunch of us all had, and we were each winning the breed every day on the Florida circuit, different dog every day. I had Ralph Dale's dog, beautiful dog. And there was one person, I won't name that person, who was really on Tommy's behind. And by the third day, he just couldn't wait. He took off like a bat out of hell, and so did this person behind him. And he had it was like he had a rear view mirror and a stopwatch. He timed it so well. He just stopped, and she went bang. And to avoid him, fence, gates, everything, armbands, lever, everything went flying. That's how it used to be done. I'm not sure you could do it that way anymore.
No, it's not a contact sport anymore.
No. There's probably some rules against all that fun. It was a lesson well learned by not just that person, but everybody that was in 100 feet that could watch it. But I did want to mention an incident here because I don't want to forget, you know, we're still here at Traverse Bay RV Resort. I went out, walked around the coach, and saw what looked like a little pee puddle. And I thought, what would pee under the coach? So the storage bay above it was where one of the battery packs is. I opened the storage door, and staring at me with a barbecue rib in its mouth was Rocky the raccoon.
Oh, no.
Now, I wanted to, it's a little shocking when you open a door a big raccoon staring at you, but I wanted to let him know. He didn't know he was messing with. He had, and I said to him, I said, hey, raccoon, do you have any idea who you're messing with? I own the largest coonhound registry in the world for 15 years. I know more about you damn raccoons than I ever wanted to know. And I'm here to tell you, I'm not afraid of you. As I ran and got a shovel.
Because they can be little grizzly bears, let me tell you.
Yeah, they can. I just ran to the shed and got, carriage house. Ran and got a big metal shovel and came back. All right, try me now, Rock. And of course, at this point, he crawled up top, terrified. And all you could see was little eyes and ears. So the reason that we knew it was there, that something was there, the reason I was suspicious of the pee spot is because the beagle, well, Olive was up this weekend too, two beagles, were ballistic all weekend. You couldn't get them out of the coach without them going under. You had to short leash them and pray that they weren't going to get under there and get stuck. Because when you put the hydraulics down, the whole thing drops. And I just thought for sure they were going to get caught on it. And it was close. And we couldn't get them in and out of the bus for 2 days. They knew where that damn raccoon was. We figured it was a chipmunk that ran under there and they were just curious. You could barely walk them. They would hop all the way back, pulling like little pigs. They knew there was something there. So if your beagle sense smells something, trust them.
Trust them.
So, yeah, it was an interesting folly. And so I called the guy. There's an approved vendor list here. So I called the pest removal guy. Ron's Raccoons, I think it's called.
Ron's Raccoons.
I really do. I know it's Ron something like that. It's Ron Rodents or something like that. And great guy. And he said, hey, it's Sunday, man. You know, I don't do rodents on Sunday. So I'm like, well, you know, figure out. I don't. If he bit into that battery pack wiring, we wouldn't have had to worry about that raccoon, right? He would have fried, but he would have smelled under there too. So I really kind of wanted him gone. So he said, I can't get there till Monday afternoon, but open the door and he'll probably want to leave anyway on his own. So I opened the door and, before all this, once it went back up higher, he left the barbecue rib right on the batteries. So I got a glove and reached in and a surgery glove that we use to clean up with. And I grabbed the bone and I hurled this thing into this pristine pond with the fountains and all the beauty and the Mediterranean color. I hurled that dirty old rib right in the middle of the pond. And I thought, geez, what if someone's standing there and wondering why I'm throwing this giant rib into the pond and pollute it? But I opened the door. So there's a woman across the pond who has a Samoyed. I'm not sure why you'd want to have a big hairy dog in an RV, but she did. And they're lovely people. They brush it every day. And they have two Shelties next door. But by the way, did you realize that Shelties barked a little, Will?
Mm.
Anyway, she's a bit older. And she made the walk around the pond yesterday and stood out there politely waiting for one of us to come out, and which was a bit. And told Cheryl that she just wanted to let us know that they all were sitting out having their coffee and they saw a raccoon, believe it or not, get out of our coach, run under it and take off into the woods. And we were very aware there's a raccoon in there, but how nice to know he left, right? How nice to know he's not just pinned up there. So trust your beagle senses here. And and know your raccoons because they're all horrible critters that all need
no. Brought to you from by Rocky Raccoon.
Back removal. Rocky Ron's
Rocky Raccoon stepped into the room.
And we had some more dogs arrive. You know, after the Cherry Festival up here, is a changing of the guards. Some of the lots that are rented instead of owned, you know, it's not many, but they'll leave and then come up and get a new crop of dogs. And I was sitting, Cheryl and I, we're sitting on that. Remember I told you about the living room furniture outside?
Yeah.
We were out there. It was actually, I got to tell you, I love it. A little gin and tonic at night. Oh, sit there. Beautiful. We're sitting out there and a miniature poodle with red pants, a black miniature poodle with red pants comes flying up to the furniture and jumps up in, I don't know, Cheryl's lap or Ben's lap or somebody's lap. And we knew that this wasn't a normal natural wild animal like a raccoon because of the pants it was wearing.
That's a giveaway usually, yeah.
So it was a giveaway. If it wasn't for the pants, it could have been anything, you know. And she was adorable. So her name was Paris, and she was old and couldn't see well and couldn't hear well, but certainly knew where to come running and how to be friendly. She was adorable. So I returned it to its rightful owner, but not before thinking, this is a lot of poodles up here. Man, what a great dog to travel. I don't care what size. What a great breed to travel with.
Yeah.
They're smart. They're
very versatile. They can do anything.
Anything. And they don't shed. Just like golden doodles don't shed, Will.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
They not only don't shed, they mat like sheep. Anyway, there you have it. Anything else, young William?
Not offhand. When's your show? When do you leave?
The movers move stuff into our actual house on the 19th. My clothes will be there on the 19th. Not until they don't arrive till noon. I don't know when I get to the clothes. But when I get the clothes out, I don't know. I hope they don't need to be washed or pressed. I guess they do. I've got to get a plane the next morning.
Oh, geez.
And go to Houston. So it's going to be, I may end up just going out and buying. it's Houston. I don't know
how many days are you there?
Four.
Four, wow.
Mm. So don't sit next to me just in case, you know? I might be giving off some stale odors.
Nice.
You don't want to do that. But it should be fun, and I look forward to it. So that's coming up. And you're heading. Oh, by the way, congratulations on your two Best in Shows this weekend.
Oh, thank you. I have one more weekend here showing dogs. And I'm flying to the West Coast to visit my son, Jamie. Coming with me. I'm flying out there for a week, and I'm going to judge part of the sporting dog specialty on there. So it'll be fun to meet these sporting dogs.
That'll be great to have the boys together. Oh, that'll be fun. And you are going to Lori's, right?
I'm going to try my best to get there. I've got a car rental. I'll drive up there.
Yep. I'll make sure that I'll call her today. This is Lori Cranemeyer, who bred Miss P. We take no credit for the breeding of her. She did it all by herself. She's a great breeder and probably has some wonderful dogs up there in Enderby, BC. No one gets to see them often because, you know, she's up there in a beautiful part of the world. You know, the farther north I go, like up here, the farther north I want to go. The air, when it rains here, it washes your car. It doesn't stain it. The air is so clean.
In the morning, when the dew is, it's just like a fresh smell.
Man, what a difference. Sure, what a difference. We don't live near a big industrial city. It's just that when it's up, the sky is so bright and clear, and there's no light pollution. You know, there's not 10 million lights on around you. You can see the stars. Beautiful. Anyway, all that and more. I don't know. We've got some summer shows coming up. I hope the dogs are kept safe and cool. We got a new system. When we leave the coach, which isn't often, our little beagle Hazel is here. And we got a new system that monitors the temperature and humidity and alerts us. I hope by now everybody with a van or a truck or RV, it shows, has got something like this. Ours is a Marcel. But there's plenty of good ones out there. These are not devices that you put on the dog. You just leave it in the coach. You plug it in.
Yeah.
And it texts. Well, in my app, in the Marcel case, there's an app and it texts you and emails you both when you've got a drop in temperature, or humidity, or rise in temperature and humidity. Works both ways. You set your range. I want it to be between this temperature and that temperature. And it alerts you above and beyond that. Any power outages, too, it alerts you, too. And I know this because we had the kids here this weekend. So we gave them the back bedroom. We slept in the front bedroom where we've never slept before. Well, the Marcel has a green glowing power light, which gives off a lot of light. So I keep a roll of electrical tape, black electrical tape, handy when lights, because I like it dark. So we taped over the green light, and you could still see light through it. So I unplugged it and went to sleep. About 30 seconds later, bing, 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 power out, power out. Oh, man.
Yeah. I had one for my truck and my kennel. So it was,
Do you really? Yeah. They're great. What kind do you have?
I don't have any more, but I did. I forget. It was pet something.
Yeah, there's a million of them.
Yeah.
And the thing, if anyone listening is out interested in buying one, talk to everybody at the shows and see what works for them and then make up your own mind.
First hand I noticed I had one when I was younger was Bill Pace.
Is that right?
Yeah, I remember Billy Pace.
That's a long time ago.
He had a pager on his belt. And one day I asked him, what was that? And it was for the alert in his truck.
How about that? I remember the pagers. That was the first, the first devices were pagers. And they were developed early on for canine cops. You know, you pull up to a scene, you leave your engine running with the AC on for your dog, and the search or arrest or whatever takes longer than you think and didn't need your dog, and your car runs out of gas, your police car runs out of gas, the dogs die. So they were the first ones that I know of that were big pushes of getting that technology going. But God, Bill Pace, that was 30 years ago.
Oh, easy, yeah. I want to say all those kids working for him, Anthony Cantor, and they all had pages on their belts.
Yeah, And, you know, we didn't even have cell phones then, so an app wouldn't work.
Nope.
Right? So the difference is, if you're looking to buy one, they come in two flavors. Some have both. There's the internet version and the cellular data version. So if you're at a remote show site, there's a real good chance you're not going to have internet service. So you need to get the cellular data one, and then you have to make sure you've got cellular data. The one that we have is an annual fee for the cellular data separately, a separate plan. It's not much. It's like 60, 80 bucks or something for the year. But yeah, I think, boy, I almost think that you...
Oh.
It should almost be required.
Yeah, definite peace of mind. I remember being at restaurants and always just checking my phone.
Yeah.
What's the temperature of the truck? What's the temperature of the truck? I used to just send a kid out. Okay, Adam, go check the truck.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was, we're talking about, I had the remote, whatever the hell I got, dish TV, wine guard satellites whirling on the roof to get TV here that I don't watch. But Cheryl likes the morning news. And, so anyway, we're talking to the guy, and he gives me like 19 remotes, right? This is for this. This is for that. Oh. Yeah, I'm getting a headache. And I said to him, when I was a kid, this is when you know you're old, right? I was the remote. We had three channels, and we'd be out in the yard, and my father, hey, Wayne. And you come in, and he'd say, change that channel to channel 8. And then you have to go over and manually turn the little click dial to channel. Now there's not even a channel changer on the TV. You can't even yell at your kid from the yard.
Remember when we all got excited when they used to get those boxes that the the buttons on it, the push buttons? Oh, yeah. That was like remote control.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. That was really fun. I think
my grandfather had one of those. I thought, oh, this is it. We're the Jetsons. This is it.
I remember my father sold a Beagle for a lot of money, a real good one. And we didn't have much. So he bought a Silvertone stereo TV all in one, right? And the TV and the stereo and the speakers all built into one and the push buttons for the, oh, baby. Oh, yeah. Tall cop.
That's it.
Good stuff. Anyway, this is the episode of Wayne and Will getting really old. And we're not that old. It's just that we've been around a long time.
That's right. We have good memories of those days from our older siblings or our parents.
That's exactly what it's all about. Well, I was adding up. We've been in the sport well over a century. Think about it. It's more like 120 years.
Yeah.
That we've had hands-on every day, all day in the sport.
So maybe it's not mileage, like I've always said. Maybe it is age.
Maybe it is. Whatever comes first, here's your warranty. Yeah. 70,000 dog shows or 70.
I keep telling them to crack that odometer. I keep putting it back, man.
Yeah, remember we used to do that too. There's always a guy in the neighborhood that would turn back their odometer. Not anymore. Digital.
Yep.
Anyway, all right, buddy. Wonderful talking to you as always. And keep your dog safe. With the heat indexes rising around here and these shows, especially when you get 10 in a row and 15 in a row.
That's right.
Yikes.
Utilize the shade, utilize water, utilize electrolytes. I even have them on B12 in the summer to keep them.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a real good idea. It's just the best way. So.
And in Ryobi fans, what would we do without those? You know, those things were... Ryobi had no idea what a hot customer they had. Oh, hot customer. They had when they came out with those fans that last for hours. Good stuff. Don't forget your chargers if you're doing that. That's happened before too. You bring the batteries, but not the chargers. Anyway, all that and more. Will, take us out, buddy.
Stay safe, everybody. We'll see you on the weekend somewhere.
See you down the road.
Party on, Bert.
I'm born. No way.
Better be paying attention, Doc.
Give me grace. Bury my sins.
So Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie. From where I need to go.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Yellow hills. Quit taking yourself damn seriously.
To see the world and take the throne. Don't hold back.
Thanks, Ernie.
Oh, we didn't mention hockey. Won't hold back.